Marilyn Kring Productions in association with Emergent Life Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 6, delivered on September 5th.
Today, free cash flow. As always, beginning with a look at the market and getting a little more intense this time. On the opening, just to start it out here, would you say that this is a good day or a bad day on the street? It is a good day. Is it a sort of good day or is it a really good day?
Sort of.
This is a hella day. The bulls are roaring. I mean, there is not enough A1 steak sauce in this town to slow down these big cows. It is a hard up day, 0.5%, and we're just at the lunch hour now on the NASDAQ, and the Dow are both having a real good day, and the S&P 500 is having a really a decent day, too. We are in a surge. The market heard some good news, what it thinks is good news, and that's all it takes for the market to just have a great big fat party on the day. Looking at the S&P 500. Looking at the S&P 500. And again, oh, there we go. And looking at the chart, is there some reason this chart's not showing up? Yep, we don't have a chart. Okay, we'll do this. Now, you can't actually invest in the S&P 500, but you can invest in a security, one of the ETFs that I told you about, an electronically traded fund, which is essentially that portfolio of the S&P 500. And the one that I usually look at, is there some reason this is not responding at all to anything that I'm doing? I mean, let's try this again. Maybe it was just asleep. Who knows? We'll go back to it and try one more time. It sure was able to show its ads. Okay. The spider, SPY. And as you can see, no, you. We'll have you tell me what you're looking at. Madam, what do you see there? You're good. That's good. She's good. I mean, yes, green. Talk to me about the opening. What happened at the opening?
The bulls went wild.
Yes, moo. And they just roared in there. And then about, a little after 10 o'clock, what happened then?
The bears came to fight them.
Yeah. And what's been going on since then?
It's been pretty even. But
even. Use another word. Don't say even. Use another word. Something else. Even wouldn't make any sense to an outside. Well, what do you mean by even? Say it.
Steady-ish.
A little bit more tighter than that. You're getting there. You're working on it. That's actually okay. Give me another word that you would say, sir.
Equal.
Man, we're going five times around Bard to get to the outhouse. We get there, but the Sears catalog's all blown away in the wind. It has been a flat market since that opening surge. You see that there was a surge. There was some good news that pushed the stocks up. But that good news wasn't sustained with more good news. And so the Bears had their chance. Wow. And the cows have come back, the bulls, and they're just not doing anything right now. They're exhausted. Have you ever seen an exhausted bull? That's all it's doing. It's not doing anything. It had its run, and now there's nothing going on. That opening surge was news that happened late last night and early in the morning, this morning, pushed it up, but there wasn't anything that happened after that. And so now everyone is kind of sitting there, well, that was fun, and now what's next? At this point, the market will move from here only on something else that would excite the bulls or the bears. And so we had that big surge, and now it's just going to park there for a while. And so if you're thinking, well, this is a great day, I'm going to put money into the market, well, it's too late for that. That news is already done and gone. And you might find out that for the rest of the day, nothing at all happens, or that the bears take over, or the bulls find something else to be happy about. A little bit deeper. And this goes to today's lecture. Let me take a company like Microsoft, MSFT. Now, MSFT, what exchange does MSFT trade on? Can you tell me? Not probably. Say it definitively. Yes, show confidence. Trust me on that. You may not have any idea whatsoever, but as long as you're confident, you will have people believe you, okay? Trust me on that. Look at me. I'm standing here, fat boy, telling you what. But yeah, just no, this is a NASDAQ stock. Why is it a NASDAQ? Why do you know that? They're all traded online, madam. No one goes in and to the... How many fingers am I holding up? What does that mean? You lost your thumb in an accident? No! For what? Four letters. It's four letters. MSFT. That would be an NASDAQ stock. 3, 2, 1, that would be something else, probably an NYSC. But this is a NASDAQ stock. So I'm going to pull this little guy up here. And I'm going to probe through it, and I'm aiming at something to culminate it that takes us toward what we're going to talk about today to a certain extent. Now, when you look at this stock, is this near its 52-week high or low? It's actually almost at its high. Its range is, for the 52 weeks, it's 93.96 to 141.68. It is now, right now, at 139.49. So it is parked near its high for the year. That, to some traders, would be a watch this signal. Is it going to break through its 52-week high today? If it is, that might be a signal that it's a buy. If it tests it and it can't make it, especially if it tests it three times, that's the old rule, that's not a good show at all. And you might want to either get this out of your portfolio or possibly do a short sell on it. Okay, so just moving it along here. Ma'am, when you look at this stock, the volume today so far is about 13 million shares. Is that an unusual volume looking at over a year or not? No. Yes. No. No. We're halfway through the day. It's about half of its volume average for a full day over the last 52 weeks. So for a full day, this is probably going to end right about on its average volume for a full day. That's okay. Don't sweat it. This is why I do this over and over again, to get you so that you can act like you know everything about the stock markets and all of that kind of stuff. Okay. Now, according to the beta, sir, Is this a safe or a risky stock?
Safe.
Why do you say that? Oh, for God's sake, stop flirting with that girl beside you. I know. They kicked you off Tinder because you were such a loser, but... There's always TikTok. You could do a song there. I mean, I'm sure there's someone who would feel sorry for you. What is it with TikTok? It's a weird... I keep watching it because it's so weird. Anyway, sir, is this a safe or a risky stock? Why do you say that?
It's not very...
No, look at the numbers. Look at the numbers.
It's...
Ma'am, talk to me. You'll say safe. Why would you say safe? Okay, look at the beta. You see that beta? That beta is just a little below 1. 1.00 is like a fulcrum. If a 1.00 would be the world market portfolio. In other words, at one point, if a stock had a beta of 1.00 in a well-diversified portfolio, that stock would swing just like the market does, with the same ups, the same volatility appearance. Not exactly all the same movements, but overall, it would flow exactly as the world does. If it's below 1.00, then it doesn't move as much as the world does. In this case, Microsoft has, in a well-diversified portfolio, it swings about 97% of the world markets. It's relatively safe, although it is pretty close to being a world market type of stock. Above 1, then you get into some yeehaw territory. And the higher it is, you get in the insane. Now, the one thing, though, is keep in mind that if you want a higher return, if you expect to get a higher return, you're going to want that beta to be higher. Once you get down to a beta of 0, that means it doesn't move with the world at all. That would be like a treasury bill, has a beta of 0. It just sits there. It has no, the world portfolio doesn't have any influence on it whatsoever. And of course, you don't make hardly, as a matter of fact, you make less than anything on it right now. So the beta is your first metric of risk of a stock, but only in a portfolio. We don't talk about stocks on their own. The next indicator, and you're going to need to write this down. I've said it before, but now I want you to make sure you get it written down. The P/E ratio, that's the price to earnings ratio. That number tells us what investors currently think that $1 of current earnings is going to become for them if they invest in this stock. Again, the P/E ratio is what investors currently think $1 of current earnings, the money that belongs to them, is going to turn into for them. In practical terms, for every dollar that Microsoft earned in its most recent performance, the market has assessed that Microsoft will turn that into $27.57 for them. Now, that is actually, long time ago, that would have been considered a high P/E ratio. Now, that's a pretty safe one. 30 is a good metric. If it's above 30, investors are paying a whole lot of money just for a dollar that they can claim now. If it's below 30, then investors are saying, we don't really want to pay it much. Like, for example, if you had a P/E ratio of 10, investors are saying, a dollar that they just made that belongs to us, they'll be able to turn that into $10 over the rest of the life of the company. So the lower that number is, the safer, the relatively safer your investment is. But that just means that it's probably not going to make you a lot of money. Now, Microsoft pays a dividend. So if you bought one share of Microsoft and paid $139.49 for it, you would get a $1.84 dividend over the next year. Now, that means that you're, right off the bat, your dividend is going to yield you some money. If you get $1.84 on an investment of $139.49, that says you're going to make 1.33% on the stock right there, regardless of any gain that the stock does in price. Now, here's the first thing that is useful to you to read and to be able to calculate. Now, before I do this, I caution you that Yahoo has people who predict the price a year from now. Whoever those people are, those Yahoos, they're saying that in exactly 1 year, that stock is going to be worth $154.41. That's what they're saying. Now, is that what it's going to be? Probably not. But it's a place to start. So here's the first thing. Madam, do you like to make money? Would you rather make money or lose money?
Make money.
Okay. Now, in our world, we are not really so interested in how many dollars you make, but what the percent return is. So in a case like this, no, seriously. Oh, that's just chunkies. Oh. Pay $139.49 in 1 year. Get $154.41. Well, that's good. You get more. That's called a capital gain. Now, the absolute value of that capital gain, I'm not even going to try to calculate that. I'm going to use a calculator. Now, the absolute capital gain that you get off that, and grabbing a quick calculator here to do this, it's going to be $154.41 less the $139.49 that you paid for it. Really? That sucked. Let's try that again. Numlock is on for some reason. $154.41 less $139.49. So you made $14.92 off that share of stock that you bought. So you had a positive capital gain of $92 Why am I writing that number? $14.92. That's what you earned in dollars. And that's called the capital gain. And it's an absolute number. On an investment, if you had made $14.92 on an investment of, let's say, $20, that would be more impressive than making $14.92 off an investment of $139. So we've got to turn it into an actual number. And the way that we're going to do that is we're going to take the ending value. Okay, here's the first formula that you might want to use. Ending value over the beginning value minus 1. That is the percent change. It is, if you were thinking, sir, of getting a tattoo, you can't go wrong with this one, this formula, on the left shoulder. Then on the right shoulder, I'll tell you when you can get there too. And I actually had one student do the one on the right shoulder. I thought he understood that I'm insane. He was. That was about 5 years ago. Okay, now. So. The capital gain yield would then be $154.41 divided by the $139.49 minus one. That will be a percent. And if I were to do that, 154, 41, according to this Yahoo analyst, divided by 139.49 minus 1, 10.70%. I rounded two decimal places as a percent. 10.70. This marker is fading out. 10.70%. Now we've turned it into a number that we can compare to other investments of different starting and ending values. So if you buy this stock today, and this analyst is right, you can sell it in 1 year and get about a 10.70% return. But wait, you also get a dividend. And that dividend is going to add gain to your actual holding. In this case, see, you can kind of cheat here because they tell you what. You should take $1.84 divided by 139.49. That's the dividend yield, would be the dividend divided by the price you paid. But they give it to you, they give it to you almost always in these screens. So in this case, I can say plus the dividend yield which is, what do they say, 1.30%, 1.33%. If you had to calculate this, all you do is take $1.84 divided by what you paid for the stock. So your total dividend on this thing is 12.03%. This is awful. I've got this purple marker. Maybe it'll do better. Yep, that's all I got. Okay, so your total gain, that would be the capital gain plus the dividend, would be 12.03% for the year. Well, that's not bad. I mean, it's not spectacular, but it's sure decent. And it is generally associated with that beta. If you had grabbed a higher beta stock, you might have expected a higher return. You grab a lower beta stock, you probably would expect something less than that. This is Microsoft. And very quickly now, let me take you through just a, and I'm going to do this a couple of times just so you get used to this part. The first thing that we, I want to do something here. The market cap. See this number right here. See that market cap? Microsoft is, according to the world markets, the equity ownership value of Microsoft is $1.0651 trillion. That's the total market value of all of the common stock outstanding. It is total shareholders' equity according to the market. Now, let me show you something here. I'm going to go, and you don't need to worry about this yet. We're going to talk more about it later. But I'm going to go to SEC.gov, and I'm going to go to the filings for Microsoft very quickly. MSFT. And I'm going to look at their 10K, which they just released. They've just released their 10K, and we're going to grind it out in the financial statements. I want to look at the balance sheet. Because the balance sheets tell us what the stockholders' equity is, too. They tell it right here. The accountants say that the total mark, the total value of the stockholders' ownership is $102 billion. $102,330,000,000. Now, let me go back here. Again, the accountants say that the company's ownership, the owners, have a total value of $102 million. The market says that Microsoft has a total value of over $1 trillion. Who's right? They're saying the same thing. Total shareholders' equity. The market is saying it's $1 trillion. The accountants are saying it's $100 million. So in other words, the market is saying that it's about 10 times what the accountants say. Who is right? Madam, who's right? The accountants or the markets? I know. That's why I am aiming this right at you, because you are wrong.
I know.
And here's the thing. When you go to buy a share of this stock, are you going to buy it from the accountants? Ring, ring. Hello. I'd like to buy some stock. Okay, I'm the accountant. Let me see what I can do for you. Or are you going to buy it from a broker who is in the market? You don't want
you
that accountant. That accountant can't sell it to you, because if I find out an accountant is selling stock, well, I will have some fun reporting him to the SEC. He can't do it. He's not allowed to do it. His world is a very different place. I put an accountant on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. You know what would happen to him? He would vaporize. Poof. When I was a kid, I suffered a lot. I was the fat boy. There was a game we had called Smear the Queer. I just be walking along, and they'd say, there he is. And the rest of it, boom, boom, pa, ha, ha, that didn't hurt, bam, ah, that hurt. The accountants on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, they are me. Except they have high cholesterol. Understand what I'm trying to tell you here. The accountants have their world, but that is not the hustle and flow, the fire and shrapnel on Wall Street. That number is for just purposes other than ours. However, there is an interesting thing that we can do with that book value. The book talks about and this is how you can tell that the guy who wrote this chapter actually is not a trader, and he hasn't been in that world. He talks about something called MVA, market value added, MVA, in the chapter 4. Or is it chapter 3? Okay. The MVA is the market value, the market cap, minus the book value. That's all it is. So they ask in the homework, what's the MVA? Just take the market cap minus the book value. That's really not a useful number, because it's an absolute number. I'll show you the one that is much, much more used in my world. It's called market to book. Market to book is the market cap divided by the book value. Now, this is one of those numbers where we use an accounting number and we really take it kind of seriously in my world. Here's why. I'm trying to find someone. Sir, you got a little grin on your face. So you were born, weren't you? Okay. What is it with this air? Do you hear this? Like that? I run a ghost hunting club. If I heard this, we'd leave the building because that whatever that entity is, it's got way too much wind. Okay? You've seen those movies where the thing just starts blowing glass out and their flesh falls off and they become skeletons. Look. Think about book value like this. The book value is actual money that did happen. It was the stock, the price people paid for the stock that the company did in its offerings, and added to that is the earnings the company made after they net of dividends. So it's like a historical amount that was put into the company through its life. A lot of it at the beginning, and then through its earnings and other offerings it did later. So let's say that I am your father. I wasn't the best, okay? I have regrets. You know, leaving you for like 12 years with your sister who was worse than I was, you know. But let's say that over that time, we put in, let's say, $200,000. And part of that was, you know, at your birth and then through your life, we put in more money. Okay, now, you are a strapping, gorgeous, profit-oriented graduate of Illinois State University, and we calculate the present value of your future earnings. Bring them back to the present, right here. And we find that that number is about $4 million. So in other words, on a total investment in you of $250,000, in real money that happened historically, your future has a value right now of $4 million. So if I took $4 million divided by 200,000, I would get a multiplier of 8. You turned every dollar that was put into you into $8. That's market to book. It's sort of like what Microsoft has done with all the money that's been poured into it through people buying its stock and the company earning money and putting that into retained earnings. It's sort of like how much a company has grown from its womb. Now, interestingly enough, healthy companies seem to float, and this is no absolute, but you'll see market to books of about 10 times for healthy companies. Market to book oftentimes is around there. A company has become 10 times what was put into it by investors and then through the retained earnings that belong to the investors through earnings. And I do want to show you a couple more of these. But in the case of Microsoft, just to do the number, Microsoft, the market cap is 1.065, so that's 1,065 million. So if I were to take 1,065 million and I was to divide that by that 102.33. There. Microsoft's market to book is about 10.4. Now let's take another company. just real quick, and I'll show you this somewhat more. Let me take, and I'll pull up another relatively healthy company, Target, TGT, in the Edgar filings. Well, I could use a 10Q for this. See what is, again, I could click, oh, there we go. Okay, where's their balance sheet? Is it that hard to say balance sheet? There we go. Okay, total shareholders' equity. And here, notice that they don't use the same term, and this drives me crazy, and it confuses the heck out of students when they, well, I don't see that line that you told us, because they're saying, I'm calling it something else, but it's the same line. Whereas Microsoft used a more traditional term, total shareholders' equity. Target uses a new age term, total shareholders' investment. So the shareholders have put into this one $11 billion. And now pulling up Target real quick here, TGT, we see that the market cap is $55.655 billion. Again, look at the difference. The market says the total shareholder, owner's position is $55.655 billion. The accountants say that it's $11.836 billion. So I'm going to do this one again, market to book. I'm going to say, okay, the market is $55.655 divided by the book, which is 11.836. So their market to book is 4.7 times. They have turned every dollar of investment through people buying their stock and through their existing shareholders letting the company reinvest the money that they earned. They've turned it over 4.70 times. Not as strong as Microsoft, you see. The market to book is sort of a relative gauge of health. On the other hand, let's have a look at this. Let us see Tesla. TSLA. The market says Tesla is worth $40.316 billion. The accountants, and here's where I want to bring up that the accountants sometimes should be listened to a little bit. Tesla, let's look at a 10Q. We can get the most recent shareholders' position, financial statements, balance sheet. Well, let's try another one. Okay. That's not it. Where is the balance sheet? There it is, at the top. I'm sorry about that. Okay, now, total shareholders' equity, there it is, 5.715. So in the case of Tesla, the market cap is 40.316 divided by the book value, and we get 5.715. You got to be careful because they're in different units. 5.715. That is interesting because the market is saying that Tesla is worth seven times what investors have put into it, which is this number is not very reliable until the company is seasoned, until it's actually at least 5-10 years old. then it starts to get have more meaning to it. But anyway, that's the market cap number and the book value interacting with each other. Now, again, the book, your textbook, does a variation on this called the market value added, which is the market cap minus the book value. This is just in dollars how much has a company added. Again, though, that's not a good idea because you could have a company with small numbers that would have greater value added. Just if you did the you would see market to book is a lot stronger. So that's something you have to take into account, and it's interesting they don't even mention market to book until chapter 4. But that's neither here nor there. Here's the upshot of it, though. A couple of things along the way that you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about stocks, when you're thinking about buying a company, or thinking about a company that is dead. Sir, I find you on the street. You're lying there, roadkill. You're dead. You know? I mean, you're gone. You're history. Bury you upside down with your butt up, and we'd have a bicycle rack. Waiting. You're not worth anything anymore, okay? However, I'm an entrepreneur. I say, don't worry, I know, he's still alive. I'm going to drag you back behind the building, and I'm going to harvest your kidneys, your liver. A few other parts, you know, for specialized surgeries. I didn't say anything. You know, you just have bad minds. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make here is that I'm going to make money off you if I use you the right way. This is often true of companies that are in their death phase. They're near the end of they've lost money year over year. And so what could they do except just die? However, the stock price could suddenly come back to life because you see, a company that has been losing money has tax losses. It doesn't have tax gains, it has tax losses. It can't use those because it's not going to make any profit anymore. But if I were to take over your company and I'm profitable, I can use those, you see, because I can apply those tax losses to income that I made in past years and amend my tax returns to recognize those losses, and then I get money back that I had paid the government, or I can carry them forward and protect some of my profits by your losses. You are dead if you stay on your own. But if I were to take your company over, it would be a great thing. You see, that's why even a company that's healthy might have a year where it has a negative profit. Well, for a person like me, that's a great thing because I know I'm going to make profit in the future, so I can apply those as tax loss carry forwards. Tax loss carry forward. Now, I can apply them to the past, too. If I'd been profitable before, I can apply those so that, in fact, I could say, well, we originally reported that last year we made like $5 million. This year we lost $3 million, so I'm going to apply that $3 million, $5 million minus $3 million, so then my tax bill falls and I can get money back that I had paid the government as a tax loss carryback. This is why you'll see companies sometimes that are unprofitable as hell in the first years of their lives, but their stock can be pretty darn robust, simply because investors think that they will start making money in the future, and then they can take these losses and carry them forward to those profitable years and protect actual positive taxable income. Or they assess, okay, the company is going to die, but We know it's going to be taken over, and whoever takes it over is going to pay a pretty penny for that stock when they take it over because there's tax loss carrybacks in it or tax loss carry forwards. So a Tesla might actually be a really sucky company, but it would still be worth investors paying attention to because it's losing so much money. Someone's got to take that over someday. There's not much, there is some belief that Tesla will eventually be profitable. And then it can take those losses, those horrible losses it's experiencing now, and carry them forward and protect taxable income from taxes. But there's also those who say, well, eventually Tesla's going to be taken over, and then whoever takes it over is going to pay a good price for that stock so that they can get their mitts on those tax losses. And so you can see companies that are in a problematic situation. Well, this company wasn't profitable, so you should sell this company. Well, no, this was a bad year. The company's going to come back, and it's going to use its losses this year against profit that it makes next year, pre-tax profit, to lower its tax bill. So, yeah, there's a lot of reason to buy a stock, even if it's having a losing year. So that's something they go through in your textbook, and it's really a simple concept because the company itself might lose money, but that losing money is not always so bad. In the first couple of years of my company's existence, on paper, I was losing money, but then I was starting to be profitable, and I could take those losses from those first 3 years and I could carry those forward and protect income, positive income. So in other words, I had a loss in year three. I had a loss of, I think this is close to the number. It was like $8,000. So in year four, when I made about $10,000, I would have been taxed on that. That was pre-tax, okay? That was pre-tax. So in year four, I could carry forward the $8,000 I had lost, and so I paid tax on $2,000, not on $10,000. So the losses actually were like, as long as you don't keep losing money, you don't want to do that because the IRS will clamp down and say, no, you're just a tax loss vehicle. But you can protect income that way. And it's a point that the book makes, and it's a good point that you should never look at profit on its own as the deciding factor. What you should be looking at is cash flow. Free cash flow, which is after in net income. Now, you can go through a whole jumble and rigmarole. How do you get to free cash flow? And I do it for a course like this, and actually, even in a little more advanced courses, I take sort of a little bit of a shortcut route to it. And technically, there are several different kinds of free cash flow. But the one we're talking about here is just a straight up free cash flow. You'll need several things. You're going to need net income. Free cash flow. Thing one you're going to need is net income. That's what the accountants say. Thing two you'll need is your depreciation expense. Because that was taken away by the accountants, but it doesn't exist. It does not exist. It's just not an actual cash flow. So we're going to add that one back. Well, why did you just take it out at the beginning? Well, because the depreciation is actually a tax shield. When I subtract depreciation, it protects pre-tax income because it comes before pre-tax. So if I take away $2,000 worth of depreciation, that's $2,000 that Uncle Sugar doesn't tax. And then I have to subtract what actually happened, my capital expenditures, what I actually paid. And I gave you the example in a previous lecture that in my company, I spent $4,500 on new equipment. And but I can't take that $4,500 away on my income statement. I have to capitalize it and then depreciate it over 5 years. So if it were straight line, which it wasn't, that would be I could take away only $900 a year for 5 years. $900 never happened anywhere. That's just what I have to put, that's what I put on the income statement. What really happened was $4,500. And so if I want to see what really happened to the money in my pocket, like that, I have to subtract out the actual amount that I paid, the $4,500. So I would add the $900 back in because that never happened. I said minus a cost of $900, but that never happened. So I have to add that back, and then I have to subtract out what actually did go out of my pocket, which was hella investment. And then there's one more. Minus the change in net working capital. Now, net working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. The change in net working capital is the net working capital right now, as of now, minus the net working capital a year previously. Here's what that means. And again, I'm repeating what I've already done. That's how I do these lectures. Now you're getting to the meat of what we do. So in other words, if I... Okay, real example. Sold an artwork for, I'll give you one that actually happened. Sold one artwork for about $1,200. This was just a couple of months ago. Now I'm going to put $1,200 on my income statement. And that's what's going to hit me on taxes is $1,200. Okay? Actually, though, that didn't happen. I extended credit. The couple that bought it paid me $400 up front. With the other $800, they'll pay me at a later time. So the problem is that $800 went to my accounts receivable, causing current assets to go up against current liabilities. That $800 means that I should, if I'm talking about real money in my pocket, subtract that $800 from my net income because it never happened. $400 of it happened. $1,200 is what I put. $400 of it happened, but that $800 other is nowhere to be found on the income statement. It was on the balance sheet as an increase in accounts receivable. So what that does is that hurts my free cash flow. I have to subtract that because there was $800 there this period that wasn't there the last period. Inventory. I just got back two artworks that cost me a total of $186. Framed, matted, nice museum glass. Okay, that's wonderful. That was a lot of money for this time of year. But I can't take that off my income statement. I can't say minus expense for framing of $186. I can't do it. That goes into inventory, and the only time I can take that away is once I sell the artwork, and then I can put a cost of goods sold. My current assets went up by $186, but it's nowhere on the income statement. So, again, current assets went up, and so I have to take that away when I'm calculating free cash flow because it really never happened. It happened, but I'm not allowed to put it on the income statement. The same is true for current liabilities. If I stop paying my bills, that's money that I said I spent, but I didn't really spend it. So when current assets go up, change in net working capital goes down. When current liabilities go up, the change in net working capital is positive. I don't know. I think you probably saw this in your accounting class, and you just try to memorize it. In the finance class, we try to get you behind the scenes and think about what it actually means instead of just invoking a formula like this. So, for example, just to take a quick, dirty example here, Tesla. Let me go back, and of course, I, as usual, I deleted that page. Okay, let's go back to Tesla. TSLA. And if I were to look at the balance sheet, let me go back to the 10K. Let me go back to the 10K. Boy, it's got a lot of communications with the SEC and things like that. Let's go back to the okay, finally. That was in February there. I could use a Q for this too, but I'll just use the K. Why I actually clicked, I closed this window, I don't know. But okay, real quick, just write down the numbers. Here's the consolidated balance sheet. Here's 2 years. So if I looked at the current assets minus the current liabilities for this year, so TSLA, zero and minus one, current assets, current liabilities. Current assets, come on. Current assets, this year, 8306308. Last year, they were, the current assets were, survey says, 6570520, 6570502. Is that right? 520. Now, the current liabilities. Current liabilities. Is there some place? 9992136. 9992316 against, 7674670. Wait, what? 136? You know what? I am so sure that there are financial statements out there that I have screwed up doing that. And they're just sitting there forever. Oh, you can't bite me. It's the errors that make art beautiful. Look at me, it's a flaws.
You gotta take all these shots that happen.
I know. My shoulders are broad. I can carry the weight of those barking at me from the downside of the hill. Okay, now, real quick. Now, let me do the net working capital here. NWC. First things first is 8306308 less 9992316.
3136. You need to erase it and just
do it again. Oh God, why don't they put me in a home? What's the actual number? 9992132. Wow. Oh. 1685, at least my cats still like me. No, they don't. Negative 1685. I can read. I'm not helpless. You're not my dad. You can't tell me what to do. Anyway, 657. No, 657. Now you got me spooked that I'm reading it wrong. 0520 minus 767 4670. So it has negative working capital, net working capital, both years. That's not anything horrible in and of itself. I mean, companies have different cash management strategies. 04150. Oh, by the way, just as a complete aside, speaking of inventory, First Fridays on downtown Bloomington, that's where you go to hang out with redneck drunks. It's the restaurants are open, they have specials, and some of the other places are. The art gallery where my art is open for people to come into. It's inside and out, called the Inside and Art Gallery. Come down there, have a look. It's at the corner of Center and Monroe. You can't buy my art because you can't afford it. And besides, it's illegal for you to sell it, to buy it. So anyway, but if you want to come down and have a look, just say hello to me because I'll be sitting there being very lonely. So the change in net working capital. Now this is a tricky one. You got to be careful with this, because the minuses and the negatives can break you. And I'm fully honest, I have screwed this up so badly a couple of times, and I just covered it, and I walked out of that classroom. It was too late. It was time to go. And so there again, there are probably some notes out there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the number 1685, 828, and then put positive negative on it, minus, just follow the formula because the minus and the negatives are what can kill you, 110-4150, that one is a negative 2, and then say equals. So their networking capital, the change in it was negative 581,678. The change in net working capital for Tesla, they bled actual cash that is not in the earnings, the profit, whatever, of $582 million just in change in net working capital. That doesn't take into account the capital expenditures. But it also doesn't take into account, you'll add back the depreciation, which would help the free cash flow. But that's going to be nothing near how much they spent that bled cash, not on the income statement, and how much was bled in cash, not on the income statement again, from the change in net working capital. These are real things. And so if you wanted to finish the story of Tesla, and this is dirty, the way I do it, I admit. But I would look at Tesla's net income. The book takes you through this whole rigmarole, but what they're saying is it's net income. So I would take the consolidated statement of operations. Okay, for Tesla, what was their net loss? $1.082 billion. Oh God, that's a lot of money. Okay, so I would take the 1062, that's a negative, okay? So we already see from the accounting statements that they lost over $1 billion. Okay, let's find out what else. Now you go to the statement of cash flows, And you're going to see the depreciation line there. See it right there? So we get to add back $1.9 billion. Holy cow. What kind of depreciation schedule are they using? Okay, so we'll add back 1901050. And then we're going to subtract out capital expenditures, which you can also find here, from investing activities, purchases of equipment, right there. Now, some would say you do this one right here. 2337, you do all of the cash from investing activities. So we'll just do that one. Now, here's where you got to watch it. Please write this in your notes. This is a negative. Don't carry that negative over to the calculation. It's just minus that $2.3 billion. Just say minus the 2337428. Don't do it twice there. Okay, now finally, minus the change in net working capital, which was 581678. And again, just say minus 581678. 581678. So what you're going to see here is what's really happening with Tesla. Hello. It's not losing $1 billion. It is actually losing, last year, it lost $2 billion in cash, in real money. That's a blood loss from hell. Yeah.
When you calculated that, you subtracted 581.
Yeah, it's actually, technically, I should have put a plus over there on it.
Okay.
Matter of fact, why don't I do that? I mean, it's a negative there, so put it. The only reason I do that is because the capital expenditures are reported as a negative, but you put them in as a positive. So I try to keep the consistency. So, yeah, put that in there. But that is the story of a company. Now, where did it get that money? It got it from stupid stockholders, from lenders. That's how a company like this stays in business. That's all I have for you. I thank you.